It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your host from SteelersDepot.com, where you can find all your latest and greatest Steelers news. It's Dave Bryan and Alex Cazzora, always Lynn, talking Steelers. And now, here's Dave and Alex.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 14, Episode Number 3. He's Dave Bryan. I'm Alex Cazzora, SteelersDepot.com. Thanks for being back with us here this, what is today, Wednesday, Steelers Nation, as we are in the middle of the longest part of the Pittsburgh Steelers training camp, day two of six straight practices that will include Friday Night Lights on Friday. Pads came on Tuesday for the first time, a very exciting and spirited padded practice for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well on this Wednesday. What a busy week this is, too. As we mentioned, you know, the string of practices that they have. Obviously, they had the day off on, Monday? And then now they go Tuesday through Sunday. I think NFL Network was out there at practice on Tuesday. I know for sure that Sirius and Pat Kerwin and Jim Miller from Moving the Chains will be out at, you know, out there on Friday ahead
of
Friday. Yeah. Friday Night Lights. I mean, they usually do a good job on their interviews as well, too. And what they'll do is during their show, which will run during Friday Night Lights practice, they'll play all those interviews like back to back to back that they recorded earlier in the day. So, you know, you're sitting there Friday night, you're following along on Twitter. If you're not there at practice and getting your great reports and others great, you know, reports on Twitter, and then you're able to listen to these interviews as you go. So this is one of the meatier portions, obviously, of training camp. And, you know, once again, it's going to be busy, and they'll continue practice today. And boy, what an eventful, both positively and negatively, practice, first padded practice of 2023 on Tuesday, right?
It was, and we won't go as in-depth as we do in the special edition episodes. You can catch the Tuesday recap of the of practice in the previous edition of the podcast here. But are you still over that George Pickens catch? Because I am not. It still blows my mind, even knowing how good George Pickens is.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I think too many people are trying to get caught up and taking sides of pass interference or whatnot. I can see arguments and why people are having those, but I mean, it's practice. I mean,
enjoy the play, guys.
I mean, we're practicing. Enjoy the nuggets there. And, you know, I look at it, I can look at this both ways. First and foremost, Porter seemed to be in pretty good position on that. And how many people make that catch? You know, in the position that he has there. Second, man, how about that catch? You know, I'm not a big fan of him turning around and showing them, you know, I got my ice cream, you know, kind of.
I like that.
You know, you want a lick, you know, and then I could do without that exchange. But I mean, these are two guys that are, that are competing. I'm sure the trash talk leading up to that is, you know, that's the stuff that we don't see in here that probably, you know, they're constantly going to try to one up each other that way. And then on the back end of that, you can see some of the footage, you know, Grady Brown comes running in, goes right to Porter. And I think, you know, just talks him through it. And I can imagine saying, look, you know, sometimes this is going to happen. The guy's just going to make plays on you. And, you know, there was other pictures, you know, after practice, Ike Taylor was there, and Ike Taylor, you know, I think went right over and talked to him after practice as well too. And, you know, I'm pretty sure Ike Taylor told him, look, you know, there's ebbs and flows. You have got to be a strong-minded guy to play cornerback in this, in the NFL. Even if you're Darrell Revis or you know, Deion Sanders or whatnot, you know, because yeah, you're going to make your share of plays, but at some point the other guy is going to get you, you know. And how you're and I remember Ike Taylor talking a lot about this during the time he played is, you know, you got to be able to put that last play behind you, even if it was good or bad, because you got to go on to the next play. And look, Joey Porter Jr. has been around the game long enough, right? You know, and you know, he obviously has his dad in his ear at all the time. So this is the part of the you know, yeah, it's a welcome to the NFL, but I mean, look, and you wrote about this late last night. These two are going to have battles for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. And one of them is going to win some of them, and the other one's going to win some of them. And it's not a bad thing to have two guys like this constantly battling. And it's also good to hear that, you know, one wins, you know, over the other every now and again. You know, the old, you know, I hate to use the cliche, iron sharpens iron. It's too easy there. But these two guys should make each other better, because once again, you know, how many guys make that catch over the position, you know, position that Joey Porter had on that play? So I don't understand why people get so caught up in is it PI or not? Look, the refs will figure that out on Sunday, and we can bitch about it or not bitch about it, you know, at that point. But I would much rather look at, you know, from the catch point on and see what we can learn and not learn there.
Sure. And appreciate the great moment that was that catch, that was that rep. A couple of thoughts here. You're right. They're going to make each other better, and they're going to make the Pittsburgh Steelers better, because you go against a top level guy like that in practice every day. You get into a game against that guy that maybe doesn't have that quite level of talent, the way that Porter is built defensively, the way that Pickens is built and plays offensively. It's going to make the game feel easy compared to practice when you're not dealing with Porter, you're not dealing with George Pickens. I would say besides quarterback, cornerback is the position that requires the most amount of mental toughness, because you're right. You're going to get burned. You're going to get beat. You're going to give up a play. The way the rules are built today, the way the NFL game is played today, is built for offense, built for points, built for big plays. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And what you saw from Porter was, you know, after allowing that, quote unquote, allowing it, it was an incredible play. Later in practice, he gets his first interception off a deep ball thrown by Mitch Trubisky. Great positioning that Porter had, pinning Cody White to the sideline, leaps, picks the ball off, runs it back. So he makes a play later in practice. My other thought in the context of that, you know, because I understand if there is any sort of nitpick about Pickens on that great catch was, you know, kind of throwing the ball back at Porter like that. I would just like to add some context. In seven shots, Porter had an incompletion thrown his way to Pickens, and Pickens thought there was a little bit of contact, that he was held. He pleads to the ref for a flag, doesn't get a flag, and Porter and Pickens are jawing at each other a little bit as they kind of walk back. And so I think that's why Pickens reacted the way he did after that catch, sure, because they were just going after at it like 5 minutes before. And so that's the context there. But yeah, I think overall for Porter, what I loved the most was after practice, Porter asked about that moment, and he was just gave the most professional, level-headed answer you're ever going to hear from a rookie. You know, as you said, iron sharpen iron. He made a great play. It's a great battle. And that's why you draft a kid whose dad played in the NFL, because he understands how the game works, and I'm not going to take it personally. And it's football, it's competition. He's grown up and he's seen that his entire life, being a ball boy, being in the locker room. He understands the NFL environment. And so that produced a very level-headed response that kept him cool and allowed him to make a play later in practice.
Did you see Ryan Clark chime in on that?
I didn't.
He said something. Let me pull up see if I can find a tweet real quick here on it. He says, man, and you know, man, and I think this is more of the throwing the ball in the face afterwards. You know, he says, man, I know George is a dog, but the way this practice would have turned into a line scrimmage after this rep, it would have then changed the entire tone of camp. Man, if this was 08, 2010. So, you know, you got a defensive player there. You can take the, you can take the boy out of the trailer park, but you can't take the trailer park out of the boy, meaning, and I mean that in the way that Ryan Clark is now an analyst, but he was a former defensive player on the Pittsburgh Steelers and a Steelers defense that had obviously a lot of pride, right? There's some things that you're not going to be able to take out of Ryan Clark, and that's his thoughts of, oh man, ain't no way that guy's going to throw that ball in a defensive player's face at practice. You know, I get where he's coming from, but also we're not at 08, 010 Steelers defense right now either. When they become that, okay, you know, I can see the point, but I just thought it was funny that, that Ryan Clark's focusing in on, I mean, he, you know, he thinks it was a great catch by George, obviously, but he immediately goes right to, oh no, you didn't.
Oh, yes, he did.
You know, mm-hmm. within that there. But yeah, you know, I think you hit on it. And look, you know, this team's had some athletic, you know, some decent corners in the past that just didn't make it over the top. You know, Cortez Allen, you know, was a guy with a lot of length, a lot of talent. But, you know, I think Cortez Allen, going back, I think he had a problem with getting past that last play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I'm sure it's a problem for a lot of corners because it's tough. I mean, you don't want to be on, because when you give up that play, you know you're going to see yourself on Twitter 4,700 times that night, and you got to go out there and make a play. It's going to happen. So I think Porter has that mental toughness and the work ethic and the right demeanor and personality. He's a talker. I mean, he'll give it right back to George Pickens as he did in Seven Shots. But
oh, with a daddy like Peasy, you know what's coming out of his mouth.
Well, that's my point, because I mean, that's why I don't think Porter got too mad about Pickens throwing the ball at him, because he understands the environment and he took it well and he made a play. So that's all you can do is you gave up a play, which is really not your fault to begin with. You go make a play later. That's football, man.
Right.
All right, let's kind of reset things and kind of go back to some of the transactional housekeeping.
We didn't know we were going to go that deep down the hole, but it definitely was a topical situation yesterday for sure.
Absolutely. So from an injury standpoint, a couple of notes here, including one important one we'll get to in just a moment. But Minkah Fitzpatrick remains out due to personal reasons. Per Mike Tomlin, he has not been at practice the last couple of days. We'll see if he's there today. DeMonte Kazee remains out with a left ankle injury. He shed the boot he was in for a day. He walked around on the field fine yesterday. I love that, just to go back to that conversation briefly, the Kazee in the background of that catch, just the look of like, oh my God, did that just happen on his face, had me laughing. But Kazee looks to be pretty minor overall. Of course, the big news here is Corey Trace Jr., the seventh round rookie out of Purdue, suffering what Mike Tomlin described a non-contact injury to his right leg, appeared to be a knee injury in the last play of the second team period session. He crumpled to the ground, grabbed that right knee, was carted off, his head down as he was off on the cart. And this is a guy that unfortunately knows what torn ACLs and those injuries feel like. He tore his ACL at Purdue on the other knee, to be clear. He had a left ACL tear back in 2021. We don't know for sure what the injury is. We'll just have to wait and see. But obviously, it looked very concerning.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, the only thing that you know, I think until we do find a definitive is to just remind everybody that, you know, there's been a couple of times in previous years, Robert Golden, Ramon Foster, where it just seemed like the worst news was going to follow, you know, the day after and or 2 days, you know, day or two after. And it ended up being better case scenarios than originally thought. So we only play doctors on Twitter, you know, so we don't know. And you know, all you can do is keep your fingers crossed. It didn't look good, and especially with his injury history. And you say it was the other knee he tore before?
Yeah, he had a broken left ankle in high school and a torn ACL in his left knee, so the other knee at Purdue. So whether I don't know if that, I guess it makes it a little bit better than the same knee, but regardless, you know, and again, we're not saying definitively what the injury is, but right. It obviously looked very concerning. We'll just wait and see. He's going to have to go back to Pittsburgh, get tests, may not know until maybe later today, tomorrow. We're not quite sure, but that is a concerning and potentially substantial injury suffered by Corey Trice.
Yeah, look, and once again, you know, we don't know yet, but man, you hope you're not talking about a guy with two serious knee injuries this early in his career, right?
Yeah, that's what you hope for sure. So some transactions, some players brought in as the training camp shuffle begins. Pair of running backs were signed and on the practice field for Tuesday in John Lovett and Greg Bell. Lovett from Penn State. Bell, I believe, San Diego State. He was in Detroit last year, got hurt, and spent part of the year on injured reserve. And so that was to replace the injured Alphonso Graham, who currently remains a Steeler, was on the practice field yesterday in good spirits. But I have to assume he'll be waived injured at some point here pretty soon after tearing his labrum during Saturday's practice. And the team also released running back Chasen Huntley, which came as a surprise to me. I don't know what the situation is there, but two running backs out, essentially, two running backs in Lovett and Bell brought in.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
I was trying to think. I knew you were going to make a reference. Was there an actor, John Lovett, or something?
Oh, John Lovett's on Saturday Night Live. Okay. Probably just a little bit before your time.
Yeah, over my head.
I think it was definitely 90s. He had a lot of great sketch characters in Saturday Night Live. I want to say he's maybe in the tail end of kind of the Eddie Murphy.
Is he like Sandler Farrell or like before those guys came?
I can't remember, you know, the exact time frame, but he might have been like the tail end of the old cast crew and then the entrance of kind of like the Sandlers and Spades and
right.
And all like that. But, you know, there's have you ever seen the movie Rat Race?
No, because you asked me the question, have I seen a movie? No, I've not seen
Whoopi Goldberg and John Lovitz is in that. I'm trying to think. There's a lot of different you want a movie that you'll just laugh your head off throughout. Rat Race. I mean, and I think I even, and that's, it's an older movie now. When that thing came out in the theaters, man, there are some scenes in there, Alex, that I mean, I'm laughing. I'm just tears running down my face. It's it's so damn funny there. And John Lovitz, he's a take it or leave it, I think, kind of guy. Some people like, you know, find him funny, and some people just think, I don't know what the fuss is all about. But I've kind of found some of his old Saturday Night Live characters to be funny there. But anyway, back to the running backs there. They needed the bodies there, and they both have tall tasks, you know, ahead of moving forward here.
They do, but they have some size. And so in typical Steelers fashion, they want some bigger guys, and Lovett got a welcome to the NFL or to the Pittsburgh Steelers, at least in backs on backers, getting flattened at least once. And I think twice by Landon Roberts and Mark Robinson. So that's a, how do you do there for him? But we'll see what those guys can do the rest of the summer. Pittsburgh also working out a pair of cornerbacks on Tuesday. I believe that would have come before the Trice injury, because usually these workouts occur in the morning and not later in the day. And so, quoting to the NFL Transaction Wire and Aaron Wilson, Pittsburgh working out Montre Braswell and Mac McCain. McCain was kind of a draft sleeper coming out of North Carolina A&T, and Braswell played at Missouri State. So one of those guys could get signed just based off the timing of the Trice injury. That would not surprise me if one of those guys came in, and then maybe you get either something with Trice or the waived injured from Alphonso Graham.
Yeah, and at some point, this Alphonso Graham, you would think, you know, they probably want to just make sure they write, you know, get a second opinion or whatnot on him, or let him have his surgery or whatever he needs first, because it sounds like that for sure is a torn labrum, according to, you know, Graham himself there. And when that happens, he'll obviously be waived injured and then clear waivers and then go to IR on a split salary. So that'll be the second player, I think, on this roster on IR that's likely to stay there for the entire season on a split salary. And split salaries, folks, once you get to week one, all players on IR count. against the salary cap. They don't count in the rule of 51 at this time of the offseason because their split salary is not high enough to get them into the rule of 51. But once the start of the regular season comes, any players that are on IR or reserve PUP or reserve NFI or anything like that, they count against the salary cap. So you're already looking at two guys in Rennell Wren and Alfonso Graham that are going to be on IR with split salaries. And I think they're a little less than $500,000 each. So you've got almost $1 million in cap charges. And people always wonder why I carry that $3 million slush fund in my offseason projection, because look, we're almost, and where that slush fund comes into play is you need bottom of the end, if it's a notable player that's on IR that's already in the 51 and you're going to need a bottom of the roster player to take his place. Well, that's going to probably be a minimum salary that takes up the roster spot there while your main guy is on IR. But on the flip side, even guys that probably weren't going to make the roster, those guys are minimum salaries or less when they're on IR. So that's why I always try to build in like a $3 million IR slush fund, cap fund, if you will, for the start of the season with doing my projections, because inevitably you're going to have some guys on IR and you've already got $1 million that you've got to account for there. Now, Corey Trice, we obviously hope for the best. But if he goes on IR, being he's a seventh round draft pick, there's more than likely a split salary designation in his. So that would be another. So you're almost up to you're about $1.3 million in IR charges, and you're not even full week into training camp.
Yeah, you're one day in pads and already having these things mount. I don't want to assume the worst case with Trice, but if it is worst case with him, would he be a waived injured or would they carry him? I mean, because obviously the waived injured, those guys getting claimed, is extremely rare, although it has happened before. What would be the mechanism to get him to IR?
I think you could just send him straight there.
Can you do that?
Yeah.
He wouldn't have to go. He wouldn't be a waived injured. How does that work? How does he get to bypass the waived injured?
Wait a minute. I'm trying to think if there's a certain date that they can start putting these guys on IR directly or not. So that might be something related to, although I think I've seen, let me see if there's any.
Because I forget, there's something with the rule, and I know I'm kind of hemming and hawing around here. I mean, you could probably waived injure him and he probably wouldn't get claimed, because if it is a serious knee injury, probably wouldn't get picked up, and he's a seventh round pick, and
here's the thing. If you waived him that way, you'd cancel out the rest of his contract.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. I didn't consider that.
So whereas a guy like Graham, it's not a big deal, to waive him injured because he's on a rookie contract and all like that. So
when you say cancel it out, obviously his rookie deal's gone. So what happens to his status for 2024?
Well, I think he'd still be under contract, obviously, for the rest of the season. But I think he would become technically a free agent at that point.
Really? Okay. So I'm sure they probably wouldn't do that.
Check on that. I'm trying to remember the situation with I think it was DeMarcus Ayers or one of them. I don't know for sure on the difference on that. I'm gonna check real quick here on transactions directly to IR at this time of year, whether or not you can directly put them on there or not.
I didn't think you could, but maybe I'm wrong. I just thought you had to go through. I thought there was a point later in the summer where you could put a guy straight on IR as you get cut down date and get your roster together, but I could be wrong about that. And again, we don't want to necessarily assume that's the case with Trice, but we do have to start thinking about those things in terms of just roster management to get through camp, get through the preseason.
All right. Here's a case with just yesterday. You had on Transaction Wire, you had Houston place Troy Harrison on reserve injured right away. Okay. You had J.C. Hassenhauer of the Giants go directly to reserve injured. So evidently they can directly place these guys on reserve injured. But within that, you do have some guys being waived injured on top of it, you know? So
what's the difference? Why would an Alfonso Graham have to potentially go through a waived injured process instead of just going straight to IR? It's not because Hasenauer is more veteran type player.
It might be. And how many vested years does Troy Harrison have in?
He might have some. I think for veteran types, because obviously you don't want to have those guys be exposed to waivers potentially. Now, right. Harrison from Houston, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah.
Now, he's a undrafted free agent last year, so he wouldn't have those accrued or vested years.
Right.
So I'm not sure then. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Are you sure he wasn't waived injured? He went straight to IR?
It didn't. Hold on. Let me see. Make sure it didn't say revert within there, because normally it says No. Just straight reserve injured.
Okay, fair enough. So I'm sure people love our Troy Hairston discussion here on the podcast. Yeah. So my apologies. That's my fault for sending us down the rabbit hole. And again, we don't know word on Trice right now, but I do want to think about potentially where he may end up.
Now here's a situation with Kent. The day before, you had two reserve list additions, one by Kansas City with Isaiah Moore. He was initially waived injured. And then reverted to IR reserve injured. So that's a situation where he was waived injured. And then after clearing waivers, he reverted to IR. Right. And then on the same day, you had Trey Turner went directly to reserve injured.
Right. But he's a veteran, so that makes sense. But with Harrison, we're getting something conflicting there. Yeah, a couple of ex-Steelers, unfortunately, with some season-ending injuries in Hasenauer and Turner. So definitely feel for those guys. Anyway, that's the update, though, on Trice, really, that there's no big update right now, but it looks like it could potentially be a serious thing, and we'll just take it day by day with him. Dave, just to kind of give a 30,000-foot view of training camp, yesterday the Pats coming on for the first time. I think big picture, the rookies were impressive. Roderick Jones, I thought, did really well in 1v1 against Marcus Golden. Darnell Washington got some good press, and he needed some good press after a couple of quiet days before the Pats came on. Handling TJ Watt and backs on backers not once, but twice, catching his first touchdown of training camp on a big lob, lollipop football that Trubisky kind of just threw up there and Washington came down with. So wasn't a perfect day for him, but it was, I think, easily his best day so far.
Good, because there's one of the main things to get excited about when it comes to Washington is that blocking ability, right? And what he's going to be able to provide in the running game there. But within that, you don't want a situation with Washington where every time he comes on the field, you think, well, they're going to run the football here. You know, I don't think that's going to be the case. You can disguise that stuff a lot better. And here's the thing. Will this offense be able to pass out of 12 personnel?
Sure. Their intent is they hope that they can. So they can run big empty. So as you said, they can be versatile and not have these high percentage run personnel groupings that'll tip their hand. So it's something that the teams that go, you know, tight end heavy in the past, like Baltimore, like San Francisco, for example, they are teams that can, you know, pass out of those formations those groupings just as easily as they can run the ball. And so that's going to be the key for Pittsburgh.
Do you remember what the balance was in 12 last year? For the Steelers, hold on a minute. I'll pull it up here for
Tom
you.
Tom Mead, does the charting for that. So I don't know. It was 20% maybe, I'm just guessing. I think 18, 20%, maybe higher. I'd have to go back.
I'm gonna look at it from just 12 personnel only for the Steelers. Let's see, 241 snaps, it looks like. Pass run tendencies, short drop back. Let's see, 74 gap run, zone run. Let's see. I wish they totaled these up by.
Tom Mead has 19% 12 personnel last year. It appears. Or wait, maybe that's the post bye week.
That's total, right?
No, I think I'm looking at the wrong thing. I don't know.
I'm showing. Short drop back percentage 60% on 12 personnel plays. Design rollout 17% Screen percent, 6%. Gap runs, 19%. Zone runs, 81% usage. So I guess that's, but they break, what's confusing is they have these broken down, they don't have total pass run. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, these numbers aren't adding up to 100%. So I'm very confused about what these numbers mean.
Right. I'm going to have to break them down even further here. Well, look at it this way. Okay, there's 241 snaps out of 12.
Okay.
95 and 8. What's 95 and 8?
103.
103 of those were some sort of drop back or pass.
Okay, so they're breaking it down by the percentage of passes, the type of pass, and the percentage of runs, the type of runs, but they're not doing it. Okay, so they're, I see. So they passed, I don't know, 40-something percent out of 12%.
And it looks like two, carrier one, looks like 122 runs out of 241. So I right at about 50%, I guess, right?
All right, yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think Pittsburgh wants to have that balance, and I think hopefully this year they're going to have the flexibility from a personnel grouping standpoint. They can go big. They can put in Freiermuth and Washington, and Connor Hayward's a chess piece. They can go 11 personnel, kind of their base core with Deontay and Robinson and George Pickens, and those guys have been versatile. Yesterday they were all mixing and matching, playing slot, playing outside, so that's good to see. So certainly the goal is to be really, really flexible and varied, not only with your actual play calls, but the looks that you give. And you can run the same thing, the same concept out of a different personnel grouping. And that's when you become a really effective offense.
Can you see Darnell overtaking Gentry from what you've seen so far? Can you see Darnell overtaking Gentry by week one?
I mean, we're just going to have to watch his development more. There's still a learning curve for a tight end to make, but you're a third round pick. You have the size, the potential of Washington. If he can show something as a blocker, if he can just become a really good blocker to start, and even if the receiving is not quite there, he's already going to be probably a better, more effective receiver than Gentry is. He's pretty limited there. Then Washington's going to see the field.
Okay. All right. Who else, young players?
Yeah, I mean, Joey Porter getting that pick. I thought he had a good day overall, despite that crazy catch by Pickens. Nick Herbig had some good battles overall. I thought against Connor Hayward and backs on backers, he won early. I thought Hayward was better later in that session. I thought in O-line, D-line, Herbig wasn't as successful as I've seen him against LaRaven Clark, but credit to Clark for bouncing back and stepping up and doing well overall. But yeah, I just thought the rookie class was making plays overall.
Did you get any eyes on Spencer Anderson yesterday?
Not, I think, was he an O-line? I mean, sure, he was an O-line. Maybe he was an O-line D-line. I actually don't know that for sure. He was playing right tackle, third team, nothing too crazy or anything moving or shaking with him. He had two reps in O-line D-line, and I had him winning both against David Perales. So a good showing there.
How about some Kendrick Green talk? We haven't talked too much about him in a while.
He was going against Keanu Benton yesterday in O-line, D-line, and I thought he held up well, especially on the second rep that they had. I thought Green had a really strong rep. I think Benton tried to club him. I forget the exact move, and Green mirrored it the whole way and really, I think, won the rep pretty handedly. So it's harder to see it in team because kind of get so many bodies in the middle at that center position. So I didn't get a great evaluation of that there, but I thought just getting to isolate those guys, O-line, D-line, I don't want to say he had a great day overall because I didn't get to see probably enough of a picture to make that statement. But I thought in the O-line, D-line battles that he had against Benton, he definitely held his own.
All right. And what about some of the you throw out the word fringe players. You better qualify that fringe players in most of our minds. Probably not, obviously we speculate of guys that we kind of think are, at the start of camp, or either inside or just outside the bubble. We talked recently coming out of that last practice for the day off about Kenny Robinson, how at this point, probably moving forward, we might need to pay a little bit more attention to a guy like Kenny Robinson, who really I didn't even have circled as really a fringe bubble guy. I had him more outside the bubble than even close to the outside of the bubble, but it sounds like, he's had a good start of camp. Who are some guys that you would consider right there, maybe just inside the bubble or outside the bubble, who seem to be faring well?
Yeah, I would say overall, I thought Jonathan Marshall, the defensive lineman, had a good practice. And he's a guy that we haven't gotten to see in Pittsburgh because he got, claimed, or I forget the mechanism to get him from the Jets, and he never ended up playing a snap last year. But I thought he had a couple of really good reps against Bill Dunkel in O-line, D-line, beat him handedly on back-to-back reps. And then I thought in team, he had a tackle for loss. He was kind of getting in the backfield. He's a guy that's really much on that bubble, maybe on outside looking in, trying to capture a spot there. Cody White continues to stack good days. And I think, you know, for him to make this 53 is still going to be difficult to do, but he should be a really strong bet for the practice squad again. And even someone like Chappelle Russell, the inside linebacker, who's in with a ton of different guys they've added to that group right now, is going to have a really hard climb, but he has a lot of energy. And I thought he was pretty effective in backs on backers and was pretty active in the run session as well. So those are just kind of three names top of my head that popped yesterday.
All right.
Where to here, Dave? I'll ask you the question that you asked me.
Yeah.
Anything else? Anything players said? You probably hear more quotes than I do post practice. Anything from them or from Tomlin that stuck out to you?
Yeah. Look, I thought, well, first and foremost about Minka. Mike Tomlin's not going to volunteer and let you know any timetable on that, you know, other than to say that he has a timetable in his head and that they fully support Minka. So obviously something going on with Minka personal wise. And I mean, we'll see if he's out there or not. You know, it's basically probably going to be a day-to-day thing with him. Landon Roberts had some sort of issue, and Mike Tomlin made it appear minor. So we'll just have to watch once you get out there at Latrobe today to see if Landon Roberts is up and running today. What else stuck out? TJ Watt, I thought, gave a really good interview with Brian Baldinger on the NFL Network yesterday, talking about some of the things he looks for in different pass sets from the tackles and how he likes to counter those. I thought that was very informational. You know, it's surface stuff. It's not shocking, but it's fun to hear TJ talk about that and how he likes to try to get so low on some of those edge rushes to dip and win the edge within that. And then he talked about, you know, about Nick Herbig. He said Nick Herbig is going to owe him a lot of money by the end of training camp because he keeps stealing all of his moves and all like that. And you know, that's the kind of thing that TJ Watt's probably not the most rah-rah pump him up leader like a Cam Hayward. You know, I think if you gave TJ Watt a choice to be in front of the camera or not in front of the camera, he would choose to not be in front of the camera, right? Sure. But within that, it doesn't still mean that you can't lead in other ways on this team. And I think it sounds like he's taken Herbig under his wing quite a bit. I kind of view Highsmith the same way. And Highsmith has even said this, that he's more of a even though he said at the start of camp that he probably needs to be more of a vocal leader, he's always going to lead by example. And I imagine, I mean, you look at a young kid, well, really any young edge rusher in that room at this point, you know, if they're willing to ask the right questions of guys mm-hmm. like TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith, they're going to get the answers, I think. And it is good. It's good that, you know, a young player like Herbig's trying to learn as much as he can when it comes to counters and moves and stuff like that. So I thought that was interesting the way that TJ Watt framed that.
I'm with you. I love it. And my view, and I think Watt has spoken to this a bit as well, so this isn't complete conjecture or speculation from me, is that TJ Watt's not the mentor in the sense of he'll come to you and be like, come on, Rook, let me take you under my wing and we'll teach you the ways. But he's a guy that obviously works. And if you watch him and you ask him, he will tell you all that there is to know. And so you have to kind of approach him about it. But it appears that Nick Herbig is that kind of guy that is willing to ask the question and, you know, maybe be a little starstruck going up to see TJ Watt and talk to that guy. I mean, that's probably a natural thing, but willing to have those conversations and hey, you know, I want to learn, I want to get better. And I'm not criticizing TJ Watt at all for the leadership style. Everyone leads in their own way, and he is certainly everything that Pittsburgh needs and more. But I love that for Nick Herbig to ask those questions, to pick someone's brain, to take advantage of the opportunity of playing next to a guy like TJ Watt, who's on a Hall of Fame track, and Alex Highsmith, who's coming off a big season, two guys that have gotten paid handsomely for rushing the passer and what they do. And so I think it's really cool for Herbig to to take that step, incorporate those moves, and he's had a good camp because of it.
And then you have a guy like Patrick Peterson, who, you know, obviously new to the team, but I view Patrick Peterson as a guy that's, he's going to teach you whether or not you want.
Yes, for sure.
You know, here comes the teaching, you know. Mm-hmm. I think he, and look, he's made plenty of money in the NFL. I'm not saying that, you know, I think Patrick Peterson is going to go the media route afterwards, and he probably should, because I think he's good. I think he's prepping with Bryant McFadden.
He is this team's Andrew McCutchen. That's how I view Patrick Peterson.
Well, and he's very likable too. He's super, super likable, but I view him as a guy that, you know, he enjoys the teaching aspect of it so much that he goes around teaching all day, you know? I'm not meaning that to be negative at all. It just goes to show you, I think, that the difference in some of these guys, and because we're not all the same, you know, with you know, how we deal with other humans, whether it be in work or social situations and all like that. But within that, you know, if something didn't work out for whatever reason in the media realm, I could see Patrick Peterson being a defensive back coach. You know, I don't think that'll happen, but I think he likes teaching that much. And you know, much like Tomlin, I think enjoys the living, you know what, out of it. You know, on top of, and then you got a guy like Cameron Hayward, who I think can wear both hats, you mm-hmm. know, within all like that. So I think you're starting to see, I mean, obviously Hayward and Watt aren't new to this team, but it just, I think this offseason already, you're starting to see the different. And then, you know, like I said, Highsmith already talking about what he's looking to do this year. And I mean, look, you've got other veterans in that defense as well, too. Ogunjobi's more of a, I'll lead by you watching me, you mm-hmm. know. I don't know too much about KZ or Neil, you know, but they've got a lot of guys that have played a lot of games. And so a couple of these guys are new to that defense here. So, look, this defense, there are going to be some high expectations with this defense this year.
Sure. And there are some concerns. I think there have been some communication issues in camp, and that's probably natural, but I just see all the new pieces involved. And I see some of these coverage busts that have been happening maybe once a practice. And you just hope those things get worked out before the 49ers come to town on September 10th. But yeah, I think leadership comes in different ways, and it's not a cookie cutter, one size fits all. And it can evolve over a player's career. I'm sure that when Patrick Peterson was 25, he wasn't the leader that he is now. But when you're 33 and, you know, you have 1 or 2 years left in the NFL, you kind of become that leader because your time is pretty short in the NFL. Maybe when TJ Watt's 33, that leadership mentality will change a little bit. But yeah, there's some really good leaders, even Landon Roberts. You know, when Quan Alexander got signed Sunday, you know, it's Roberts and Alexander walking down together. They're going over things early in practice. That's a guy that Robert knows might come for his job, might take away his playing time. It's still going to help him out, still going to get him up to speed on the system. And you got to respect Landon Roberts for that, who had a good practice on Tuesday before getting dinged late in the session. Offensively, Allen Robinson, kind of that take you under the wing mentality for George Pickens for this still pretty young wide receiver room. So it's exciting to see these veteran guys come in and be a good and healthy presence.
All right, I think we got about closing in on the 45-minute mark here, so that's probably enough, because you and I'll be have to get back after this thing later on tonight and recap practice. What are some of the things that you're specifically going to try to keep your eyes on today? And I don't know how the hell you do it. Your neck, you must have a sprained neck trying to watch all that at one time and take the shorthand and all like that. So kudos. And yesterday's report was very, very thorough. And in first day of practice in pads, I know there was a lot to watch, and you got the drills going, you know, the wide receiver versus DB drills going on while you got backs on backers going on and all like that. But quick recap of kind of what you're looking for on Wednesday.
Yeah, I still try to watch trench play, assuming the pads will be on today, and it's Tomlin's discretion, but I looked at my notes last year, and they were in pads the day after the first day in pads last year, so they should be in pads today. So assuming that's the case, you try to watch trench play as much as possible. More information on Broderick Jones, maybe some insight on a guy like Kendrick Green, how he's looking. I want to try to watch some more Keanu Benton a little bit more intently as well. So, you know, I just try to soak up those opportunities as much as possible whenever the pads are popping.
All right. I'm looking at the email machine. Not many questions in here at all. So we can kind of table some of those until we get later on in the week. Maybe Friday, because that's a Friday night light. So we won't be so rushed to probably knock out the morning podcast and all like that. But anything else to add before you ride on off out to Latrobe?
Nope. We'll come back later tonight, talk about what happened on Wednesday and go from there.
All right. Good job. All right. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeders Depot. Follow Alex on Twitter at Alex_Kizora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, SteedersDepot.com. Hit the donate button up right navigational bar. Also, if you like an ad-free version of the site, SteedersDepot.com, upper right navigational bar that way. So hope you enjoyed this. Make sure you're getting through all those camp report, diary reports from nightly from Alex Kizora. And once again, we do a, about 35, 40 minute nightly podcast recap of all the practices as well, too, that most of you should be well aware of are happening right now as well, too. So in the meantime, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Alex.